Welcome back to Dakota Midday on South Dakota Public Broadcasting. I'm Carl Gerke. The Mexican border city of Juarez has a terrifying reputation as a violent battle zone in the war on drugs. As recently as 2010, it was the world's most violent city with more than 3,000 murders. But last year, homicides fell to just below 500. Charles Bowden is an investigative journalist and author who's been writing about Juarez for the past couple of decades. His books include Murder City. Molly Malloy is a research librarian and border and Latin American specialist at the New Mexico State University Library, and she's documented Mexican homicides with an emphasis on Juarez. She's the curator of the Frontera List, a forum for border issues. She also assisted with research for Murder City. And Charles Bowden and Molly Malloy are the co-editors of the book, El Sicario, the Autobiography of a Mexican Assassin, and they're speaking at Mount Marty College this evening during a Great Plains Writers Tour presentation. They're with us on the line from Yankton, and Chuck and Molly, thanks for joining us on Dakota Midday.
Well, it's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Chuck, we'll start with you. Juarez, is it much different than it was a few years ago when there were the thousands of murders every year?
Yes. It's like visiting a city after a tsunami hit it. The killings are down, but the place is still semi-ruined. During the violence, about a third of the houses were abandoned. 200,000 to 300,000 people fled the city. About 40% to 50% of the retail businesses closed. 10,000 orphans were produced by the slaughter. 100,000 dogs went feral as people fled the city and abandoned them. And, of course, none of this has been put back together magically just because the killing stopped. The second thing that's continued is I don't think there's anybody in Juarez doing business now that isn't paying extortion. All the people who refuse to pay extortion are dead. And so it's better, but it's not too good.
It almost sounds like people just adapted to the way the city changed, and that's kind of what has led to the decrease in homicides?
Well, yes. Start with, yes, the people that would resist, a lot of them are dead. You had a city with a huge population loss, 200,000 or 300,000. 30,000 to 60,000 of the rich or affluent people crossed the river to El Paso, so they're no longer targets. And the other thing is, NPR had a report this morning which said it's a city on the mend, but still has problems, and it was fairly accurate. Look, there's a key thing going on in Juarez that nobody likes to talk about. The major industry are basically American factories, and they pay miserable wages and create a kind of culture of poverty. There's 500 street gangs. Half the kids in the city are adolescents, don't have jobs, and can't afford to go to school. And you lay on top of that that it's a major crossing for the drug industry, and you've got the recipe for a disaster. But right now, it's like somebody's had a serious illness with a violent fever. Right now, it's in temporary remission, but I wouldn't count on it for the future.
Molly Malloy, in looking at Juarez, do you have any idea of what that future might be for the city, how things will look in a couple of years?
Well, one of the things to mention, I think, is that, yes, the violence has gone down, but a total of more than 11,500 people have been murdered in the city since 2007. That is a very large number of people. Most of them were young people, many of them parents. And so one of the residues of the hyper-violence during those years from 2008 to 2012, really, is a huge crop of orphans. A lot of people have lost one or both parents. The government provides almost no assistance for the children whose parents have been killed. There's an extreme lack of social services, not just education, but a lack of good health care for people unless they happen to be employed. And many people in the city are not employed in the formal sector and have no access to health care at all. There's virtually no mental health care in the city at all. And even though many people, most of the city, has survived the violence, many of them have suffered from the shock of losing relatives. There's no one there that doesn't know someone. that has been killed, and many of them have close relatives who've been killed. We have a friend in Juarez who estimates that for every murder, at least 40 people are directly affected. So basically, we have a lot of social dysfunction, dislocation, trauma that many people are living with. And as we know just from the PTSD suffered by many of our veterans who come back from Afghanistan or Iraq, those people often have mental conditions that make it very difficult for them to adapt to normal life. When you add to that extreme poverty, unemployment, lack of education, lack of opportunity, and a criminal system that essentially runs the city, it's not a good prospect for the future.
Now, Molly, you've been involved with documenting the homicides in Juarez. I think that there is probably a perspective or the belief that most of the people that were killed were involved with the drug trade in some ways, in the drug gangs, the drug cartels. But that wasn't the case, that plenty of innocent people were killed?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, one of the things that I did, and still do really, almost every day, is look at the actual accounts in the newspaper of the murders. And while it's impossible to know exactly why many of these people were killed, it's obvious that a large majority of them were just ordinary, innocent people who either got on the wrong side of a criminal group, a gang, someone controlling a particular area of the city, or people who were caught in the crossfire, completely, you know, uninvolved people. That when you read these stories every day, you see the descriptions of the people who are killed, and it's very difficult to believe that nearly all of them have been involved in criminal activities. Most of them are ordinary poor people. There was a case just last year, I believe in November, of a young woman about 30 years old, the mother of five, who was shot down as she walked from one place in her neighborhood back to her house, supposedly caught in the crossfire by a group of marauding gangsters who were looking for someone else to kill, and she just happened to be in the way of the bullet. And if you look back over 5-6 years of this kind of violence, I would say, I mean, it's hard to know exactly, but I would say at least 3 out of 5 of the killings are probably of that character.
Now, Chuck, you've been writing about Juarez for what, about 20 years. What was the city like when you first started going there and writing about it?
Well, that's the sad part. When I first arrived there in 1995, I thought the city had terrible problems and poverty. And now I find myself, like everyone else, talking about that time as the good old days. At that time, it was a city of well over 100,000 people working in factories, and they were living in cardboard shacks because the wages were so low. And there were gangs everywhere, and of course, the city was dominated by a drug organization. The guy who ran the drug organization, a man named Amado Carrillo, controlled the papers, the newspapers, the radio so well that no one even said his name out loud. Once I was in a private apartment with a guy, and he had the blinds pulled, and he said Amado Carrillo's name out loud, and then looked around in his own apartment, and there were only two of us there, and said, I never should have said that. It was that kind of a city. Now, that city was only murdering 200 or so people a year, which seemed like a lot of violence to me, but that was a better city. The second thing is, the wages have steadily declined in real pesos as time has gone on, meaning the earning power of the people there was better in 1980 working in one of these factories than it is today. And so what I failed to see was the future. I thought when I arrived there it was really terrible. I'm an American. And that's when it was good compared to now. And I must say that I watched it for years, and I would tell people dire predictions like this can't go on. You can't create a city of almost total employment with wages nobody can live on without something happening. But I never anticipated the explosion of violence that started in late 2007. I never in my wildest dreams thought I'd see war as murder over 3,000 people in 1 year. I was staggered. And when it happened, I was absolutely baffled, and so were the people I knew there. And everybody reached out for explanations, and none of them fit. Because, as Molly mentioned, a lot of the people being killed were just average people. Now, I'd like to add one more thing, that you don't deserve to be murdered just because you sell some drugs. But I happen to hail from this part of the country, that both of my grandfathers are from southwestern Minnesota and northwestern Iowa. And in the 20s, both of them ran stills, and they were both totally honest people, and it's because they didn't have any money just to make a living. A lot of that kind of behavior is seen in war as just out of desperation, people just trying to do anything to survive.
So at the heart of the problem on Juarez, it's poverty.
That's really good. There's no silver bullet for anything. But, yes, I'll give you an example. El Paso and Juarez are contiguous, meaning if you stand in one, you can't see where one starts and stops and the other begins. It's just one sweep of city along the river. And when Juarez killed over 3,000 people in a year, El Paso had 5 murders. El Paso is not simply overwhelmingly Mexican-American, 80-90% at least, but many of them are the same families. So then you have to explain, what is the big difference between each city? Well, I think several things. Decent wages, honest cops, free public schools, electricity and water that works, you know, the ability to have a life and security, which the people in Juarez don't have. So in the end, you can say corruption, drugs, everything else. But frankly, if you made the wages in Juarez even remotely comparable to El Paso, I think the violence would collapse.
Now, Molly and Chuck, you're co-editors of the book El Sicario, the autobiography of a Mexican assassin. There's also a documentary, El Sicario, Room 164. Am I pronouncing that correctly?
Mm-hmm.
Sicario. Well, Molly, who is El Sicario, and what does he tell us about the violence in Mexico and the drug business?
El Sicario is a man who worked for about 20 years as a contract killer, a hired assassin for the Juarez drug cartel. We think that his career began in the early 1980s when he was a young teenager. And by the time he left the work there in Juarez, he was probably getting close to 40 years old. He left actually before the current wave of violence really hit the city in 2008. He left sometime in late 2007. He escaped because he could see that there was some change coming or beginning between different rival gangs for control of the city. And he said to us that he no longer knew exactly who his boss was, who he was working for. It became a kind of free-for-all where people were going after each other, and he made a decision to try to escape that was successful. He's unusual because almost no one can escape that life and remain alive, but somehow he did it. He decided to talk to Chuck originally while Chuck was working on the book that became Murder City through an acquaintance, a contact. He talked to Chuck originally, and then I came in on the second interview, basically, because we needed someone who was a little bit better at interpreting between Spanish and English. He talked for a long, long time. Chuck wrote an article about it in a magazine. And then a friend of Chuck's, who's a movie producer, a movie director in Italy, in Rome, read the story and asked, "Do you think this guy would talk on camera?" And we didn't think he would, but he did. And we think that he eventually decided to give us these interviews and to be filmed because he wanted to give a warning to other young men not to take the path that he had taken. And the story that he tells about his life in the cartel as a killer and about how the cartel works as a criminal system within the Mexican state is a story that I believe is really important for understanding how a place like Juarez came to be the most violent city in the world.
And Chuck, what's some of that understanding? What can we learn from him about how all this works, and maybe even just looking to see what the future, again, talking about the future of Juarez?
Yeah, well, look, he was a commander in the state police, this killer. He made a decision. The drug organization in Juarez put him through the police academy, which they do a lot of people. He then became a killer. He killed at least 250 people. He can't remember them all. And he's not a psychopath. Here, what you got to know is, in Juarez, only 2% of the murders are resolved. That doesn't mean anyone's arrested. That means the police decide they think they know who did it. Essentially, if you kill anybody, nothing's going to happen to you. You will not be punished. A guy like this guy was one of 11 children. His parents worked, and his mother scrub floors in El Paso, crossed illegally every day. His father worked in a maquila, and he decided he didn't want that kind of life and went for the money and became a monstrous murderer. And frankly, the only reason he stopped, in part, was he became religious. He's a born-again Christian now. That's also the reason I think he talked. He had a sense, which he told us, that even though he knows God can forgive everything, he thinks he's an exception. Nobody can forgive him. And he just wanted to get out there what he said is some kind of penance. But what he tells you is what's possible in the city. Most people there aren't killers. Most people there are honest. This guy was one of 11 children. The rest of his family disowned him. They were all poor and went straight. But in fact, nothing's going to happen to you if you become what this guy became, a cold-blooded killer. And the other thing is, you got to understand the poverty. I know I keep coming back to it. When he first did his first serious work for the drug organization, his big thrill was they paid him, and he crossed the bridge into El Paso, and he could go to Peter Piper Pizza and buy one. He never dreamed that he could afford something like that. He had his own pizza. Now, that's a world most of us don't know, but it's a world driving a lot of young men in Juarez who have no futures, meaning there's no school available for them. You have to pay to go to high school, and there's no jobs. And so they go into this life, and they know full well they're not going to survive. This guy didn't expect to survive this long.